From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Stockton, California.
I live next door to Bob Saget.
Selma.
Rockridge.
Tracy, California.
Noe Valley.
Everywhere, I'm homeless.
Coming up, now 11 years since the U.S. invaded Iraq, there are still millions of Iraqi refugees who need help.
I fell down and I started bleeding. That's what I remember. But no one would dare to approach and help me.
We'll follow the story of Ahmed Al-Kubaisi, one of those refugees, and meet the person who helped get him out of Iraq and to the Bay Area.
He's never been out of his little city, Amman, Jordan, where he lived for a year or 2 years, and now he's going to come to the States. I mean, that's another way of life, let's face it, you know. But he's very, very understanding, very open, and that helped a lot.
That's coming up on today's Cross Currents. Today marks the 11th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, and even though the U.S. officially left the country in 2011, it's still in turmoil. Just yesterday, a series of bombings claimed the lives of 16 people.
Can you imagine small areas? They are surrounded by concrete walls, 6 meters high, and there's a gate in each small area. Every 20, 30 blocks, there's something like that. This is where Baghdad is. What takes you about 20 minutes by car to go from one spot to another, now it takes about 6 hours and you may never come back. It's just beyond imagination. And it's getting from worse to worse to worse every single day.
That's Hisham Alalusi, an Iraqi-American who lives in Hayward and came to the U.S. in 1980. There are millions of Iraqis who have left. Many ended up in neighboring countries, and some, with the help of the U.N., got refugee status and relocated to the U.S. or to Europe. California is now home to the largest number of Iraqi refugees in the country. Last year, we introduced you to one of them. His name is Rahman Al-Kabi. Here's Rahman recalling his journey out of Iraq.
People call that road the death road, seriously, because there is no guarantee that people or we in the car will make it safe to Syria. It was a very terrifying trip. It was one of these days that I will never, ever forget. We couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe it when we reached Damascus. We were so happy. We were so happy to reach that country that gonna give us a hope to start our family, happy family again.
Al-Kabi eventually made it to San Francisco, where he chased his dream of becoming a clown, or Rahman the Clown, as he calls himself. One of our listeners heard Rahman's story and decided she had a way to help fulfill that dream. We called Tina Marzell today and asked her to tell us how it happened.
Last year, I was listening to KALW when I heard a young Iraqi man, Rahman, talk about his journey to the United States as a refugee. He was and is an actor, mime, clown, who was forced to leave Iraq at the time. And I was so moved by his story that I contacted KALW, who connected me with Citizens Reach Out. And a week later, I met Rahman in Monterey, where he was living and still is, and helped to organize a fundraising benefit for him so that he could be a workshop intern at the San Francisco Mime Troupe, where I've been associated for nearly 20 years. It was a very successful fundraiser. He was able to spend the summer as a workshop intern, learning more about the craft of this kind of mime. And he had a wonderful summer, and it was a wonderful opportunity for those of us to help him.
Individual acts like that one are what continue to help Iraqi refugees create lives outside of their home country. Today, we're going to tell you another story about how an Iraqi refugee made his way to the Bay Area. His name is Ahmed Al-Kubaisi. He's from Fallujah. He lived across the street from an American military base. When he was 15 years old, he was going to the local market and was shot by a stray bullet from an American soldier. Now Ahmed's at a local hospital here in the Bay Area, where KALW's Hana Baba went to hear his story.
Hi. Here, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's lunchtime. A nurse brings in a tray of food and sets it on the bed where Ahmed is laying. There's a window, a TV, a sink, and the constant sound of a pump at the foot of the bed that pushes air into Ahmed's mattress. It inflates and then deflates regularly on either side of his body, simulating motion so that he doesn't get bed sores. I ask him to take me back to the moment right after he realized he was shot.
I fell down and I started bleeding. That's what I remember. There were lots of people in the street, passerbys, soldiers at the military base. There were some friends I knew in the street, but no one would dare to approach and help me. I stayed like this for a few minutes, and then someone threw a rope and tried to ask me to catch that rope so that they can pull me away from the site.
They took him to the nearest field hospital, where doctors ran an IV and evaluated his condition, but they couldn't do much.
Right when I was admitted to the field hospital, my dad knew of the situation and he was with me along the way. I had to move between different hospitals, from the field hospital to Al-Fallujah hospital and then to the Ramadi hospital. I was even referred to hospitals in Baghdad, and after evaluation, they found out that I have paralysis of my lower limbs. I can't move my legs anymore. They did a few measures, but they thought at the end that there is no solution, and if I wanted to do anything further, I have to be seeking help outside Iraq, in Jordan, maybe.
I ask him how he paid for all the expenses and if he thought to seek help from the U.S. Naval Base.
After going back to Iraq in the year 2008, I visited the U.S. base to file a complaint and to ask for help in regard to my medical situation.
At the U.S. base, he met someone he calls Captain David. We don't know his last name.
Captain David.
Through a translator, I managed to tell Captain David my story, and he seems to have enough information. He pulled a file and gathered all the information, and he told me that at the time this incident happened, he was actually thinking of sending a group of people to help me or to save me from where I was. But he found out that some of the passerbys, some of the friends, took me already. He also told me that they got enough information about my background, my family, and the fact that I was just passing by, I was unarmed, and I wasn't holding anything in my hands. He offered his apologies, and he said all they can do is regret it and apologize. I told him that I had to go to Jordan and spent a lot of money on my health care, and I need some help financially, but he couldn't do that. He only offered to consult some of the senior officers at the base, and he told me that he will get back to me with the news.
Ahmed managed to meet with the captain a couple more times, but he says ultimately the U.S. military told him they would not be able to help him. In the meantime, Ahmed and his family were receiving death threats from militiamen who wanted to bomb the U.S. naval base near his house and because he was seen going in and out of the base.
Because of our proximity, they kept telling us that if we couldn't move out of the house, they will shell our house as part of their offensive against the U.S. naval base. We didn't have any alternative residence, so we could not move out. The first threat was an envelope with a letter saying that we have to move out. The second had a CD with scenes of people being massacred, killed, and a bullet telling us that if we couldn't leave, our fate will be exactly the same as the people on the CD.
That's when Ahmed decided it was time to leave Iraq for good. He wanted a chance at better health, a college education. He would go back to Jordan and try to go to the place with the best health care possible, the United States. He packed up his things, bade his family farewell. I asked him if he remembers the day he said goodbye.
Saying goodbye to my parents wasn't easy. I had to convince them that because of my medical condition, there isn't much that I can do in Iraq. I had really rough times over there because of the symptoms that were associated with my medical complications. I had fever that kept me up at night, infections. I couldn't even eat properly because spasm in my leg would pull the plate off my lap and turn it upside down. I had to do something, and when I told my parents, they were all resisting at the time. My father thought that it's just something I would do temporarily. I'd go seek help for my medical condition and then come back. He thought I will not last over there because there is nobody else who can take care of me, and away from the family, I will not survive. My mother, she wanted me to go out to seek help. She wanted me to get better, but at the same time, she couldn't take the fact that she will be away from me for a long time. I asked them, and I tried to convince them that it's the only way. They took it at the end with some sadness in there, but they blessed it, and I left.
Those are the words of Ahmed Al-Kubaisi, translated by Zaid Farranso. They spoke with KALW's Hana Baba. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. We're following the story of how Ahmed Al-Kubaisi was injured in Iraq and made his way to the United States as a refugee. Once he decided to come here, he had to apply for refugee status through the United Nations in Jordan. At that point, he was connected to Hesham Al-Alusi, an Iraqi-American who lives here in the Bay Area. Al-Alusi started a foundation that offers assistance to refugees from around the world who are trying to put their lives back together. He remembers the first time he heard Al-Kubaisi's story.
That was the 7th of July last year when he arrived in Auckland from Chicago, because Chicago from Amman, Jordan, came down. He said, we're going to need some bags for him. We didn't have enough of that. I did not understand. He said, bags what? He said, these bags for urine, stuff like that. Said, what's going on? He said, he's connected. Oh, my God. From there on, I start realizing what's going on. So we ran to the nearest store. We bought some stuff and bought other things and so on. And
tell me about the first time you met Ahmed.
At the airport. Arrived there, and he was always smiling. Seemed to be in good health. A little bit tired, but he's been traveling for the last 20 hours or so, and seemed to be very happy for his arrival there. He's very pleasant personality, open. Never asked somebody for anything. He's always satisfied with what he got. I mean, right now, I know and you know how the hospital food is, and this is not even one of the best hospitals, something like that. But he would never ask for anything. And we keep asking, tell us. He would never say anything. So we try to, imagine what would somebody of this, would eat and bring him things. And tell us what you like of these. He would not say anything like that. The other day, I cooked, for example, for him some broad beans with tomato sauce and some Iraqi rice and very white rice, that day we tried to bring him some Iraqi kebabs and things like that. And he would never comment on anything. Take them. I know he enjoys them very much, but if he's going to comment on it, that means we're going to do more of it. So he doesn't want to burden us with that. Hopefully we're relieving him some of his pains and some of his what he lost, really. He's physically very fit from the waist up. His muscle is well built. He does gymnastics. At this situation, he lifts weights and things like that, and he climbs on things. But from the waist down, it's very dilapidated and gone. Tell you the truth, I was extremely concerned that once he comes here, we may have some problems and headaches and misunderstandings and all of that.
Why?
Because of he's never been out of his little city. He's never been out of Amman, Jordan, where he lived for a year or 2 years. And now he's going to come to the States. I mean, that's another way of life. Let's face it, but he's very, very understanding, very open. And that helped a lot that made our task very easy.
How angry is he that he was shot in the back by a U.S. soldier that was supposed to be protecting his country?
I expect him to be extremely angry, but he never showed any anger so far. He probably was angry years ago. Not now.
And Ahmed's story is just one of, like you say, millions of refugees now from Iraq. What do you think it means?
It means that the level of devastation that happened to this country is not have been fathomed yet. We really can imagine things, but I think it's much, much deeper than that. There are people, you know, for example, because of his personality, and somebody was helping him to come the first time from Iraq to Jordan, he was able to do this. There are people who can't even get to Jordan or get out of their own village or city. Guess what's going to happen to them? They're just going to rot and die in their place without anybody hearing them, me or you or anyone else. And I'm sure there's millions like that. Where are they? They're probably either gone or on their way out.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm speaking with Dr. Hesham Alalusi, who's the president of the Alalusi Foundation. And we're talking about the legacy of the U.S.-Iraq war and occupation. What do you think is going to happen next in Iraq? There's a lot of fighting going on still. A lot of violence continues to happen post-U.S. occupation. Where do you see hope?
The hope is really rather dim right now, especially with what's going on with Syria and others. And I'm afraid it's going to be a very long period of turmoil. Things got to boil down to something else and other and different than what we have right now. It's going to be very, very long boiling until we get some point. What's happening in the west part of Iraq, in so-called the Anbar, Fallujah, Ramadi, for example, it's just unbelievable. The area is being dismantled. And there's many, many other areas like that. So where is the country heading?
Where do you think it's heading?
I think it's heading to much more chaos, much more... there's no civil war in there because all these people are very much related to each other. And they would not fight among themselves, but there's all this polarization, religious and sectarian and so on. So that's, the country is heading towards that. You know, each group is going to fight the other group.
Which usually means more refugees, more displaced people, more wounded people.
Very much so.
So what keeps you an optimist moving forward? What feeds you?
My beliefs. Yeah, I believe that we have to do something good. We have to not give up. And whatever we are doing, if we believe is good, we should continue it.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. You were just listening to Hesham Alalusi. Alalusi left Baghdad in 1980, and using his own money, he founded the Alalusi Foundation to help Iraqi refugees like Ahmed al-Kubaisi. Kubaisi is seeking treatment at a hospital right here in the Bay Area. He was shot by an American sniper when he was 15 years old while going to the market to get groceries for his family. He's unable to use his lower body and continues to suffer from bed sores that weren't properly treated. We're going back to the hospital now, where KALW's Hana Baba spoke with al-Kubaisi about his life here in California.
عمو هشام قال على اساس ان الميديكال مالتي 8 اشهر يعني وينتهي شرح اجدد هاي الشغلات.
Ahmed al-Kubaisi is in his hospital bed talking to his Iraqi translator about some very American issues. His Medi-Cal coverage, when his SSI benefits will kick in. All of a sudden, the Muslim call to prayer plays from an app on his phone. Out of respect, we fall silent while it plays. That's proper Muslim etiquette. I ask Ahmed if he was ever conflicted about coming to America. After all, the sniper who shot the bullet that hit him was American, part of an American occupation of his country.
All along the way, I never thought of it this way. I was struck I was targeted by the U.S. military forces, by the soldiers and not by the people. And what I know of the people and what I hear of the people is that they're good people, they're tolerant, and they're loving. So along the way, I thought of multiple scenarios. But the idea of a conflict never occurred to me because I know the people are different from the military. I might have a problem with the military, but none with American people.
I ask him, so what are your plans now?
زواج.
You're young, you can go to school, get married.
زواج مريض.
He says, no, I'm not ready to get married.
My number one target is to get out of the hospital. I really need to get better. I need my medical condition to stabilize. My ulcers are my companion for the past few years, and I really want to get rid of them because living with them means that at any given time I might have infections and then get disabled again. Once I get out of the hospital, get my things together, and I might think of going to study and achieve my dream in getting into the pharmacy school. I also would love to help my parents get out of the situation they're at the same time. The governorate of Anbar, where they live, where the city of Fallujah is under fire for the past 3 months. It's totally unstable. My parents had to leave where they used to live and go to seek refuge somewhere else. My sisters are not in a safe condition. They couldn't go to school anymore. And I want them to get out of that environment, and I hope I can get them into the United States.
I ask him, do you ever dream of going back to Iraq?
Of course I dream of going back to Iraq, but to live there is a whole different issue. Things are still challenging. It's actually getting worse day after day. So I can't see myself going there, living there, tolerating all the things I used to tolerate at a younger age. To see it, for sure, it's everybody's dream to go back and remember the childhood, but I can't think of going back for living.
That's Ahmed Al-Kubaisi, and a special thanks to his translator, Zaid Faranzo. They spoke with KALW's Hana Baba. We also want to give a special thanks to Citizens Reach Out. Citizens Reach Out is a local organization that was instrumental in Al-Kubaisi's arrival and care here in the Bay Area and connected us with Hisham Al-Alusi. There are thousands of stories like the ones we heard today, and we want to hear yours. Have you or someone you know been displaced by the war in Iraq? What avenues have you found for help? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and just leave us a message. And if you're interested in reaching out to one of the organizations here in the Bay Area that helps refugees from Iraq, go to our website for a list. It's KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Jen Sheehan, Jeremy Dalmas, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Julia Scott, Stephen Short, Raisu Sussman, Todd Whitney, and Melanie Young. Today's show was produced by Leela Day and engineered by Seth Samuel. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thanks to you, KALW is independent, listener-supported public radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.